for the beauty of the earth, for the glory of the skies. What a beautiful setting of the hymn. Supposedly, it was inspired by the beauty of nature and love of family, but it seems to me it's a wonderful companion piece to this part of the creation story from Genesis 1. Now, the portion of the scripture that addresses God's creation of humans is told again and a bit differently in Genesis 2, but you'll see why we're using this today. Genesis 1, 28 through 31. Then God said, "Let us make humankind in our image, according to our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the wild animals of the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth." So God created humankind in God's own image. In the image of God, they were created. Male and female, they were created. God blessed them. And God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and over every living thing that moves upon the earth." God said, "See, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit, you shall have them for food. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food." And it was so. And God saw everything that had been made, and indeed it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Be fruitful and multiply, the scripture says. And oh, some of us take it right in. Go and have children, they say, lots. And no birth control other than abstinence or other natural methods that do not work. Let me tell you a story about childbirth. The mid-1800s was considered the start of the golden age of the physician scientist. Doctors were no longer thinking of illness as an imbalance caused by bad air or evil spirits. They looked instead to anatomy. Autopsies became more common, and doctors got interested in numbers and collecting data. When Dr. Ignaz Semmelweis showed up for his new job in the maternity clinic at the General Hospital in Vienna, he started collecting some data of his own. Specifically, he wanted to find out why one out of every six women whose babies were delivered by the medical students and supervising doctors at the hospital died of childbed fever. He studied two maternity wards in the hospital. One was staffed by all male doctors and medical students, and the other was staffed by female midwives. And he counted the number of deaths on each ward, and he discovered that women in the clinic staffed by doctors and medical students died at a rate nearly five times higher than women in the midwife's clinic. Why? Semmelweis went through the differences between the two wards, and he started ruling out ideas. Right away, he discovered a big difference between the two clinics. In the midwife's clinic, women gave birth on their sides. In the doctor's clinic, women gave birth on their backs. So he had the women in the doctor's clinic give birth on their sides. And nothing changed. Then Semmelweis noticed that whenever someone on the ward died of childbed fever, a priest would walk slowly through the doctor's clinic, past the women's beds, with an attendant ringing a bell. This time, Semmelweis theorized that the priest and the ringing bell so terrorized women that they developed a fever, got sick, and died. So Semmelweis had the priest change his route and ditch the bell, and the changes had no effect. 15% of the women who delivered children in the physician-attended ward died. Semmelweis took a leave of absence from his hospital duties and traveled to Venice, and when he returned, he learned that one of his colleagues, a pathologist, had fallen ill and died. And he had died of childbed fever. Semmelweis redoubled his efforts to determine why more women were dying from childbed fever in the doctor's clinic than in the midwife's clinic, and finally he hit upon a hypothesis. The big difference between the doctor's ward and the midwife's ward was that the doctors were doing autopsies and the midwives weren't. Semmelweis hypothesized that there were cadaverous particles, little pieces of corpse, that students were getting on their hands from the cadavers they dissected. And when they delivered the babies, these particles would get inside of the women who would develop the disease and die. If Semmelweis' hypothesis was correct, getting rid of those cadaverous particles should cut down on the death rate from childbed fever. So he ordered his medical staff to start cleaning their hands and instruments, not just with soap, but with a chlorine solution. Chlorine, as we know today, is about the best disinfectant there is. Now, Semmelweis didn't know anything about germs. He chose the chlorine because he thought it would be the best way to get rid of any smell left behind by the bits of corpse. He was absolutely right. And when he imposed this, the rate of childbed fever fell dramatically. I couldn't help but think, if there had been someone with the prescience and the temerity and the resources to make a sign at that moment, a sign, a banner, it might have said, "Keep your filthy hands off our bodies." And we might still be carrying it today, with little to no effect, because people are still too bad, if not deadly, effect. People are still putting their hands and their opinions and their rules all over other people's bodies. Now, let's be clear, because you never know when Fox News is going to pick up one of my sermons and run with it. I am not advocating for anything goes. Not saying there should be no rules, no demand for consent, no age considerations. I'm not saying there should be no restrictions in the third trimester. I'm not saying that abortion should be considered as a primary method of birth control. I'm not saying any of that. I'm saying that when it comes to reproduction, to bringing children into the world, a pregnant adult of sound mind should be able to make an autonomous, informed decision, bringing in doctors, partners, friends, pastors, anyone whose counsel is desired. Our current worship series is based in part on Marianne Williamson's poem. Hate has talked so loudly for so long. Greed has talked so loudly for so long. Liars have talked so loudly for so long. Love has got to stop whispering. And love has got to stop abdicating the microphone and the video screen and the pulpits to those who have lost sight of the God who created humankind in stunning variety and called us good. As one of our recent memes said, "The difference between me and you is you use scripture to determine what love means. And I use love to determine what scripture means." Love has got to stop whispering And I have some thoughts about that for when it comes to reproduction. And I was reminded this week that information does not equal transformation. Information in itself is not likely to change anyone's mind. What I'm about to offer today is not offered to help you change anyone's mind. As I have said many times before, for those who believe that abortion is murder, period, you will not change their minds. It doesn't matter when heartbeats are detected or if the pregnancy is a result of rape. A person who believes that medically ending that pregnancy at any stage is murder will not change their minds. I will not help you change their minds. I hope to help you stop whispering. I hope to give you confidence that you are not standing on the wrong side of Scripture and you are not tempting the wrath of God with your pro-life views. Some things we've got to stop whispering about. We have to stop whispering about Planned Parenthood. It is an organization that is vitally necessary, far beyond providing safe ways of ending pregnancies. Do you know that Planned Parenthood offers birth control, primary care, HIV services, transgender hormone therapy, men's health services, cancer, STDs, fertility routine checkups, education regarding sexual and reproductive health, pregnancy testing, STD testing, and women's services, including cancer screenings and pelvic exams. And we have to stop whispering about the maternal death rate for Black women. Each year in the United States, about 700 people die during pregnancy or in the year after. Another 50,000 people each year have unexpected outcomes of labor and delivery with serious short or long-term health consequences. Black women are 3 times more likely to die from a pregnancy-related cause than white women. Multiple factors contribute to these disparities, such as variation in quality health care, underlying chronic conditions, structural racism, and implicit bias. We've got to stop whispering. We have got to stop whispering about teens giving birth. Here's the truth. Conservative states lift up their Bibles and squash education, and those states have the highest teen birth rates. Teenagers in these states do not have significantly more sexual experience than teens elsewhere. This is according to a 2019 risk behavior survey by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Teens in those states don't have more sex, but they are far less likely to use birth control because in many of their schools, sex education is not required and school-based curriculum must stress abstinence. We got to stop letting them carry the discussion on that. It's time for love to stop whispering. And what are we doing to these young people when we force them to deliver babies? Anybody talking about this? During teenage years, a girl's uterus and bony structures, including her pelvis, remain narrow, developing very slowly as she ages. It's a very dangerous moment to give birth. It's not uncommon for girls to face obstructed labor because their pelvis is not developed to accommodate a delivery. Going through with a vaginal birth can cause lasting damage to a teenager's pelvic area and more. So teenage childbirth often ends in C-section, causing uterine scarring that almost guarantees She will need to give birth via C-section if she has more children. Adolescence. This is a quote from Dr. Ann Waldrop, a maternal fetal medicine fellow at Stanford University. Adolescents are at increased risk for low birth weight babies, high blood pressure in pregnancy, preeclampsia, higher complications from sexually transmitted diseases, and increased rate of infant death. Love has got to stop whispering. And finally, there are over 407,000 children and youth in foster care at this time. 34%, to be fair, are placed with relatives or kin. In 2021, according to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, on any given day, over 390,000 children are living in the U.S. foster care system. Over 113,000 of those children are eligible for adoption, and they will wait in the system, on average, almost 3 years for an adoptive family. When the voices are yelling, hundreds of people want children and they will adopt them, love has got to start yelling back. That's not what's happening. Stop whispering. Stop the loudest voices from circumscribing what Christianity looks like. They will point to these scriptures, Exodus 20:13, you shall not murder. Of course you shall not murder. But this is not simple. It is not as simple as ending a pregnancy, disposing of an embryo, or sentencing someone to death. That's why in Matthew, Jesus said, you have heard. It was said to those of ancient times, you shall not murder, and whoever murders shall be liable to judgment. But I say to you that if you are angry with a brother or sister, you will be liable to judgment. And if you insult a brother or sister, you will be liable to the council. And if you say, you fool, you will be liable to the hell of fire. It's not that simple. They will point to Numbers 5. If she has made herself impure and been unfaithful to her husband, this will be the result. When she is made to drink the water that brings a curse and causes bitter suffering, it will enter her, her abdomen will swell, and her womb will miscarry, and she will become a curse. If, however, the woman has not made herself impure but is clean, she will be cleared of guilt and will be able to have children. Does this remind anyone else of witch burning? If she dies in the fire, she wasn't a witch. From Psalm 127, this is pointed to sometimes. Children are a heritage from the Lord, offspring a reward from the Lord. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior are children born in one's youth. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. They will not be put to shame when they contend with their opponents in court. Nick Cannon has welcomed 12 children with 6 women since 2011. What kind of argument is that? Psalm 139. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. And from Jeremiah 1:5, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. Honestly, for a while now, I have refrained from using these verses from Psalm 139, my favorite, and these verses from Jeremiah. I have a long history, a love story with these verses. I've used them for youth retreats and used them in women's groups and turned to them many times when I doubted myself, my decisions, and I've been avoiding them, and here's why. Because I thought when I quoted these verses, these beautiful verses, those who are opposed to abortion were gathering ammunition from them. I had turned to them many times when I doubted myself, but I believed that they would use them against me and I would be under fire, and that they would be using those verses to say, see, at the moment of conception, a child becomes beloved of God. See, at the moment of conception, no, before that, a soul becomes known and beloved of God. I assumed they would do it. Some have done it. But honestly, to give that up was unfair to them and unfair to me, because it is not their weapon. It is not my weapon. It is my blessing. I need to read Scripture and immerse myself in it, not so that I can use it against people or tell them what it means, but so that it can mean something to me. And so that all of the conversations I have with them are founded on the understanding that I am precious in God's sight as they are. By shying away from these beautiful passages, I was shorting them and shorting myself. I was shorting them because I was allowing them to believe that that's the way you read the Bible. Here's what I mean. Reading those words from the Psalm and from Jeremiah and using them to determine that not only is a child precious to God, but an embryo is precious to God, that sperm and egg before they are united are precious to God, and so forth and so on. It is very unkind to let people stay in that place. The truth is that when we read Scripture that way, we become mathematicians and scientists and statisticians. At what moment does the embryo receive a soul? At what moment does life begin? Those are not the right questions. I'm going to end with the beginning. So God created humankind in God's own image. In the image of God, they were created, male and female, they were created. God blessed them and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. Be fruitful and multiply. It is not a command. It is a blessing. If we read it as a rule, we quickly run into all kinds of ridiculousness. God is saying, go and reproduce to two people. Two people only, Adam and Eve. No Steves anywhere. Go and reproduce. With whom? With each other? And then what? With the children? The brothers? The sisters? How quickly Scripture becomes absurd when we read it this way. When we are anti-scientists coming at it to determine how many hours were in God's day and how many years has the earth existed, it's not science. It's not rules. It's blessing. You hear this every time you worship. Go in peace. It is not the pastor telling you how you are to walk out of the building, go quietly, go with a particular feeling in your hearts. It is a blessing. Go in peace. May you feel the peace. May you live in the peace. It is a benediction. Be fruitful and multiply. It is not a mandate. It is a blessing. And one last thing. I have come that they might have life and have it abundantly, Jesus said. That was the fulfillment of the blessing. Be at peace.